Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Oh, das ist gut. Ich sehe was, was du nicht siehst, und das ist blau.
Boah, Papa, das ist ja einfach. Da, diese blaue Ladesäule da.
Oder die da.
Und da hinten, da ist auch noch eine.
Das ist ja gut.
Lade jetzt schnell an über 2500 Aral-Pulse-Ladepunkten beim Connect-Testsieger mit dem besten Ladenetz Deutschlands. Bestell dafür einfach deine neue Ladekarte in der Aral-Pulse-App. Willkommen bei Aral-Pulse. Mehr Informationen zum Connect-Test auf aralpulse.de.
Hello, welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm James Reynolds, and in BBC OS Conversations, we bring people together around the world to share their experiences, and this time, conversations on national service. The war in Ukraine has contributed to a heightened awareness of security in parts of Europe. The reintroduction of different forms of national service has become a debate once again. So we hear from young men about their experiences, whilst others share why they objected to serving, and they describe the consequences.
You know, when you say, oh, I didn't serve, it opens up not only conversation, but opens up a place of argument, a place of discourse, and a place of judgment.
It's been more than 60 years since national service was abolished here in the UK. Between 1949 and 1960, all physically fit males between the ages of 17 and 21 had to serve in one of the armed forces for an 18-month period. But now the requirement has been back in the headlines, at least as part of the current general election campaign. The ruling Conservative Party has promised to bring back a system of national service if elected. And looking at Italy too, the Deputy Prime Minister Matteo Salvini has introduced a bill for mandatory military service. And in Germany, the Defence Minister has presented a proposal for selective military service focused on volunteers in order to boost Germany's depleted armed forces. But in other countries, national or military service has never gone away. So for our first conversation, we wanted to hear from two people who've recently completed their mandatory time in the military. My colleague Krupa Pardi spoke to Villa, who completed a year of national service in Finland in 2020, and to Chris, who served in Singapore between 2019 and 2021.
Coming out of school, I was 18. In high school, it's a very different environment, I would say, very safe. And when you go in the military, I think there are a lot of different things you have to kind of get used to. I think like the regimentation, the discipline, and a lot of things that you'll be doing has actual weight and responsibility. So it definitely met my expectations on the toughness and how it would be.
Yeah, I would agree with Chris here. It definitely helped grow with your discipline. And it was definitely a jump from just being a high school kid to something a bit more serious, serving your country. I never really had any idea what the army would be like. Back home, anyone who's served in the army, I usually always tell scary stories to younger people, but I kind of just never listened to that and wanted to form my own opinions when I started my service. And I think that was the right way of doing this, as it kind of, I really did enjoy my time in the service.
What kind of scary stories were you told?
Scary stories would involve how your seniors would treat you if you didn't necessarily behave, or if during cleaning duties something was left untidied. But I'd say these kind of stories were often coming from like the older generation, when the army was probably a bit harsher. Whereas these days, I think, even though the discipline is still present, and of course you like the tight rules that you have to follow up with, but these kind of punishes, or like how you were punished if you did something wrong, did not really exist. So as long as you didn't do anything that was like completely out of order, usually there was like no need to be scared of anything.
I'd like you both to take us back to your first day, when you first arrived, and what happened, and what do you remember from that first day? Chris, why don't you start?
Yeah, I think it was really interesting. So for context, in Singapore, you're thrown off to an island for 9 weeks for basic training. And so it's an island completely off Singapore. We can't leave the island for the first, I think, 5 to 6 weeks. And so it's a really interesting experience because you transition from being at home with your friends at school to being on this island with a bunch of platoon mates and going through just basic military regimentation. I think it was very formative at first, almost humbling, I would say. I think everyone shaves their head, everyone looks the same, everyone dresses the same. So regardless of your background, regardless of your status outside, like everyone starts from zero. It was great for me because I met a lot of people that various backgrounds, different personalities to deal with and yet to adapt. I grew up around the world in Asia and in Europe. And so I wasn't 100% Singaporean. And so it was really interesting to mingle with people that lived there all their life. I think interesting experience for me, at least when I first arrived. A good transition for sure.
Well, I would like to tick box on everything that Chris just said as well. For me, it was kind of the same as well. We, instead of 9 weeks, we've done a 6 week basic training. But the first couple of weeks, it's more so you learn your ways around the barracks. You learn the time schedules. You first learn how to dress appropriately with your camo gear and like, et cetera. Because like Chris said, everyone wears the exact same clothes. So it was quite interesting in that sense as well. Instead of getting tossed into an island, we had a 1 week camp in the forest instead, where we finished our basic training. It really resonates what Chris just said to me as well, as I've lived in Spain and in United States prior to starting my service in Finland as well. So in a sense, it kind of gave you that kind of identity towards your, and like just realizing that you're part of your own country, that like, yeah.
Did either of you ever worry about having to serve in a war?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think for me, no. I think Singapore diplomatically is very, very neutral, as you know. I think for me, there was never the kind of thought in my head that we'd get invaded maybe, or we'd have to go to war. But I think Singapore is a country where the national service was made because we're such a small country. And, you know, you never know. You saw, I think, Ukraine getting invaded by Russia. Like, these things can happen no matter how big or small your country is. So definitely didn't, I think, come as a thought in my head. But it was always a possibility, seeing the events in the world that we see. So yeah. I think that's my answer, yeah.
I would say there was always, especially living in Finland, sharing half of our borders with Russia. So that always kind of, it's always in the back of your mind, kind of like, what if, especially now with the conflict with Ukraine and Russia, like it's maybe even more present question in your head. But at the same time, because I know that people have been doing this kind of compulsory service for God knows how many years in Finland, like many, many, many years. I know that we're well qualified, and that's also part of the reason I wanted to do, I ended up doing a longer service and ended up serving in the officer school as well, because I thought, worst comes to worst, if we get into an active conflict, then at least I'll be doing what I've been trained to do and I will be enjoying my time there. So it doesn't feel like, it doesn't just feel like you're there for, and the front lines getting fed to the cannons of the enemies, but you're actually doing something that really matters and like what you've been specifically being trained for. So in a sense, there is always that kind of feeling of what if something or this or that happens, but at the same time, it's kind of have to see the bigger picture, if that makes sense.
What are the skills that have stayed with you?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think there's so many skills, a lot of skills for sure. I think for me, I think the interesting skills were, I think obviously handling rifles, handling different grenades, being able to, you know, drive different vehicles, at least for me, from ambulances to big trucks to, I think, towing guns. I think for me, it's a lot of skills that I use day to day. But overall, I wouldn't say really it's the skills that I use. It's not like, you know, I'm shooting rifles or throwing grenades and driving ambulances right now. But I think definitely the skills are, they come more in soft skills. I think knowing to manage different people, different personalities, knowing to kind of maintain relationships with people that are maybe your bosses and that, you know, you don't have power over them, and kind of maintaining that relationship. So, and also the things I alluded to before where, you know, you have the mental strength to go through a lot. I think a lot of the times when I go through hard times now in work and at university, it's like, well, I went through like a 2 week or 1 week field camp in the forest in a shell scrape, and you're telling me I can't solve this problem right now. So definitely it gives a great perspective.
I think they call it. Yeah,
exactly. That's exactly it for me. Yeah.
Yeah, I've actually never thought it that way, but Chris put it correctly. It's more so the soft skills that follow you up when you move back to your civil life, instead of, whereas I feel like the real skills that people usually would expect are shooting guns, handling rifles, throwing grenades safely, and how to build an emergency shelter. These kind of skills are probably more like specific to the army, and like maybe if you're a big outdoor hiker or a camper, these kind of skills can follow up with you. But I would have to agree with like a lot of the soft skills, like even subconsciously you don't necessarily realize how much you've developed your skills in terms of like how you would deal to your subordinates or how you would talk to your supervisors or like seniors, and like this kind of the hierarchy and the structure that army has is like helps definitely build these kind of soft skills.
Villa from Finland and Chris from Singapore on the impressions that national service left on them. I'm James Reynolds. You're listening to BBC OS Conversations from the BBC World Service.
Beim Big Mac sind sich alle einig. Schon probiert? Den legendären Big Mac gibt's jetzt in zwei weiteren Varianten. Den Double Big Mac für den doppelten Genuss und den Big Mac Bacon TS mit knusprigem Bacon. Nur für kurze Zeit und nur bei McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. In allen teilnehmenden Restaurants, nur solange der Vorrat reicht.
I'm Cressy Twigg from the Global Jigsaw podcast, where we are asking, is the Islamic State group a threat once more? 10 years since they declared the establishment of a caliphate, the jihadists are claiming to be behind a spate of recent terror attacks.
You cannot ignore the danger of IS. When you're not looking, they will rebound and regroup.
The Global Jigsaw from BBC Monitoring looks at the world through the lens of its media. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
You may have seen the news from South Korea the other week about BTS star Jin and his discharge after 18 months of mandatory military service. In a live stream, viewed by millions, of course, he described the people he'd met at his military base as amazing. Now, we haven't been able to get hold of him, no surprise, but we did get this message from South Korea about what military service is like.
Hi, my name is Hyunsoo Kim from South Korea. I'm 32 years old and I live in Seoul. I served in the Korean Army for 2 years, from 2013 to 2015. Almost every man in South Korea has to serve in the army due to the long-lasting conflict between North and South Korea. To be honest, most of the boys in their early 20s hate to spend their valuable 2 years in the army. For me too, if I can choose whether to go or not to go to the army, I would never go. However, there still are some positive experiences you can gain after finishing your military service in South Korea. The first thing is being more fit and physically healthier. South Korean students have to study, in average, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. to go to the so-called desirable universities. So there's not much time for the physical activities in the school days. However, in the army, where most Korean boys go after graduating high school, we spend most of the time exercising, and personally for me, it was the time where my muscle ratio was the highest. The second thing is widening the spectrum of people you meet. As we grow up, we tend to only mix with the people with similar backgrounds, such as town, school, jobs, etc. The army does not discriminate between the boys, as long as they are able enough to be enlisted. So I could gain insight from people that I may never have met if I never went to the army. The last thing is gaining knowledge on how to protect my country and family. By participating in military field trainings, we not only learn about how to operate guns, but also about the scenarios on how to act when war engages in the Korean Peninsula. There's a saying in Korea that if you cannot dodge it, enjoy it. And this kind of sums it all up for the army service in Korea. Since there's no choice, why not just savor it?
And we also got this message from Brazil.
Hello, my name is Rodrigo Coraggi. I'm 33 years old. I'm Brazilian and I live in the south of the country. I served in the Brazilian army from 2010 to 2020 through mandatory military service, and I did not volunteer. For me, the army was a very troubled period, a hostile environment with a lot of oppression, masculinity, aggressiveness, which I never fit into. I worked in a military hospital, and I was able to perform operational functions such as telephone operator, guard, doorman, office assistant, and cleaner. On a daily basis, it was a routine that was not so tiring, but mentally imprisoning. I felt very out of my way, without purpose, without developing my abilities, but I chose to stay for 2 years to enter higher education, sacrificing myself in exchange for a better future.
Our thanks to those who sent us messages, and we always welcome your contributions. What would we be without you? Details of how to get in touch and send us a voice note can be found on the BBC OS page of the BBC website. So far, then, we've heard some positive and not so positive experiences of military service. In our second conversation now, we're going to meet three people who have objected to taking part, sometimes known as conscientious objection. Mikhail served in military and civil service in Finland, but objected before he finished and was punished with 2 weeks in prison. Etan refused to serve in the Israel Defense Forces, the IDF. And firstly, you'll hear from Netuit in Thailand.
I decided myself to oppose military service when I was 18 years old, still in my high school. It came after 3 months of military coup, seized power from elected government, and it made moment of reckoning for me. And since mandatory service had persisted for a century without reform, and it treated people badly, inhumane ways for many years, and nothing changed, then it quite be my moral imperative to do something.
What is the penalty that you might have to pay?
It maximum to 3 years in jail, yeah.
What do your family and friends think of your decision?
Firstly, they thought that I was crazy, and many people disagree with me, and they want me to have alternative paths. You know, we can pay under table. Many people did bribery. Was a normal in Thai society.
Bribery.
Even, you know, yeah, bribery, yeah. Yes. Some people who have privilege can do that, but I know my privilege, and I know many people do not have that privilege.
Let's bring in now the experience of Mikhail, who's in Finland, and you've got that long border with Russia, and I saw your president saying the other day that over centuries there have been 30 different wars with Russia. Mm. So talk me through your own decision to refuse or object to military service.
The idea initially came from when I was about 14 or 15, and a close relative to mine, instead of going to the military, they went and did a civil service. And then I also decided that, okay, I'm going to go the same way. So I, instead of going to the military, I applied for civil service, and that's, it's always an option. But then, or when I started my civil service, I realized that, okay, I could also be a conscientious objector, and I completed most of my civil service, but in the end, I decided to object, and I didn't complete it.
And on what grounds are you objecting?
Maybe toxic masculinity could be a term that could somehow describe it, the way, the atmosphere of the military service. And then also it's the inequality between genders here, because it's only compulsory for males to go to the military. And then also just I wanted to do an anti-militaristic act, this like pacifistic act. And I was just thinking about this, that I might also be ready to die for things that this country that I live in, Finland, that it represents to me, but I wouldn't be willing to kill for those same reasons.
And we've been talking about the fact that your country is on the border with Russia, which is engaged in a war in Ukraine and has been engaged in wars against Finland. So I want to turn now to Etan. You're in Israel. Your country is at war,
yes,
at the moment, and military conscription for non-religious Jewish Israelis is compulsory for
yes,
men and for women. When you've been served with conscription papers, what have you told the IDF?
At the time, I already had my doubts, not about service so much, because I did grow up with a sense of a duty to my community, to my society. But throughout my schooling years, I realized that much of the system that is in place is not to prepare you for life, for studies, for family, for community, but service in the army itself is the goal. So 16 and 17 year old who go into the army for 3 years, that is seen as the pinnacle of what you can do as a citizen. And that's also what makes you a fully fledged Israeli. And that militaristic tendency and that mindset, and I saw the whole system as leading to that. So when I came to the draft center, I was sent to a tribunal, basically, where they had a conversation with me and asked me what my thoughts are, because I already had my reservations. And I said that it's not that I don't believe in a military or in the right to defense, but that the society's goal has become to sustain the army, not to mention, you know, the occupation, and not to mention wars since I've been alive that have been not existential wars, but war that could be avoided by peace or by other solutions.
And you saying that to them, saying, look, I'm not against the idea of a military, but I'm against some of what you do. Is that seen by the IDF as a valid reason not to serve?
It does not. And the IDF treats every case differently, apart from very few occasions of people who got out for pacifistic reasons, who are mostly come from very elite families who are very educated and have the vocabulary to descend and have the social background to support them. If you express dissent, if you want to go out for any reason, the only way they let you out is through a mental health clause. So basically, expressing dissent in Israel makes you insane in a way.
And did you claim that clause?
Well,
invoke it for yourself?
I didn't invoke it. In fact, they invoked it for me.
I see.
I was sentenced for my objection to a prison sentence, which I have already served the sentence. And after that, it hasn't really affected my day-to-day life. I assume that if I would be constantly telling everyone, a person that I meet, a new person, that, hey, by the way, I'm a conscientious objector, that it would most likely be an issue for
really?
A certain people. They would, yeah, I think so.
What would they say to you?
I think they would be just surprised that I think in that way, because of the obvious threat that Russia poses to our country.
I mean, in Israel, you know, even in job interviews, even on dates, I think it would be that casual second or third question. Where did you grow up? You know, what do you do? And what did you do in the army? So it's just a social reality. It's almost like going to school or doing anything else that's so ingrained in our collective psyche that these conversations happen on a daily basis with every person on every level of society. You know, when I ask that question and I answer, you know, instead of the casual, oh, I did, you know, I was a cook, a friend of mine was, or I was a truck driver, or I was a fighter. You know, when you say, oh, I didn't serve, it opens up not only conversation, but opens up a place of argument, a place of discourse, and a place of judgment.
I feel like I'm in a very privileged position to in which I can make this decision to object, because although it has some implications to my life, they aren't very severe. But I think that it's what these other people have at stake it's much higher, and I have a lot of respect for their decisions.
Mikhail in Finland, Etan from Israel, and Netuit in Thailand. Our thanks to them for sharing their experiences and to all of our guests this week. I'm James Reynolds. You've been listening to The Documentary from the BBC World Service.
Hol dir zum Deutschlandspiel einen Big Mac und bekomme einen zweiten gratis dazu. Nur in deiner McDonald's-App. Beim Big Mac sind sich alle einig. Ba, 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 ba. Nur für registrierte App-User an Aktionstagen in teilnehmenden Restaurants.